Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's up, friends? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. Of course, you can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Appreciate you all being here today. Before we get started, have a favor to ask of you. Want you to, if you can, kindly, nicely, go show some support to some of our friends here at the Pack-A-Day Podcast. First of all, Andrew Murte, Kyle Fellows, just launched a brand new podcast, the Draft Fellows Podcast. They are breaking down right now every single NFL team's draft class. It's been phenomenal so far. You're going to want to check that out. Of course, make sure to support Perry Goldstein and Maggie Loney, both friends of the show with Packs What She Said. They are moving back to Cheesehead TV. Of course, make sure to support Cheesehead TV as well. They are super supportive of the show. We get to put our YouTube channel and our audio episode up there every single day. You can find Dusty Evely over there. Maggie and Perry with Packs What She Said. Tons of friends of the show are writers over there, so make sure to check that out. And of course, Packer Report as well. I do some writing for Packer Report, as does Dusty, Jacob Morley, Jacob Westendorf, Ross Uglum, a ton of people that you see, Mark Eckel, that you hear on the Pack-A-Day Podcast, you know, 365 days a year are over there writing for Packer Report as well. So go make sure and support some of the friends of the show if it is in your heart to do so. Appreciate that in advance. Of course, these next couple days, Tuesday, Wednesday, we've got Packers minicamp, and we will have back-to-back days of minicamp coverage. Cannot wait for that. I'll be at both days of practice. The next two episodes will be dedicated to breaking down everything that happened. So if you also want to show some love, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews, and make sure that you are following along and subscribing to the Pack-A-Day Podcast so you do get those updates and those episodes as soon as they come out. And of course, make sure to check out those Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships as well. One piece of news from the weekend that I forgot yesterday, Mercedes Lewis is back. Unfortunately, not with the Packers. He's back with the Chicago Bears. It is so unfortunate that there are only two other teams that former Packers are allowed to sign with once they are done being Green Bay Packers, that being the Minnesota Vikings and the Chicago Bears. I guess if you're a future Hall of Fame quarterback that's done playing with the Packers, you only get one choice. You have to go to the Jets. it's just crazy how these things continue to happen. I'm super happy for Mercedes. He just turned 40 years old. He's had just this unbelievable, epic NFL career. Obviously wish it was anywhere besides Chicago, or I guess Minnesota as well, but really excited to see him continue to play football. Enjoy watching him play. That's good. I know not a lot of people are exactly tuning in to watch Mercedes Lewis every Sunday, but I love that story. He's good for the game, and looking forward to seeing him play. And I think it's his 19th season in the NFL. Just absolutely crazy. So like I said, wish it was not for the Bears easily, obviously, but happy to see that he is back for another season. That brings us to today's main topic, and that is the Packers offseason biggest losers. All right, that has a harsh connotation to it. If you don't want to hear about it, first of all, yesterday's episode was dedicated to the Packers offseason's biggest winners. You can just listen to that one. Here's the other thing. This is not based off play. This is not based off talent. This is not based off who they are as NFL players. All of these players that we are discussing today will have the opportunity to make the most of their individual situation. Nothing is set in stone. And I understand that when you hear the biggest offseason losers for the Green Bay Packers, that sounds derogatory, demeaning. It's not meant that way. What we're looking at here is circumstances. Players that maybe going into the offseason or at some point in the offseason had better circumstances than what they do today. You know, we talked a lot about yesterday where a lot of the corners, you know, I think benefited from the circumstances of the offseason, meaning the only corner that was brought in really from the outside of any major significance was Kalen King, a very back end of the 7th round draft pick. If they brought in multiple corners, if they drafted some big time corners, if they signed some big time free agents, that's certainly going to change the calculus for guys like Corey Ballantyne and guys like Keyshawn Nixon, guys like Eric Stokes, Carrington Valentine. That would change their circumstances quite a bit. but it didn't. So they were kind of some of the winners of the offseason because Green Bay didn't heavily go in that direction. Today, we're talking about players who were maybe impacted in a negative way. So maybe they lost out on some opportunity because of what Green Bay did this offseason. That's what we are looking at. We're not saying that any of these 10 players are bad or are terrible or are horrible, no good, very bad. We're just saying their circumstances maybe were not what they were hoping for or expecting as the offseason started. Hope that's clear. With that being said, number one on my list is AJ Dillon. A couple things here. Number one, AJ Dillon knew he was going into a free agent season this past regular season in 2023. He knew he would be an unrestricted free agent in 2024. Now with Dillon, he's always been a little bit of a victim of circumstance because he's always been the number two guy. Aaron Jones has been the clear and obvious number one. But he had basically almost an ideal scenario for himself with Aaron Jones getting hurt in that first game of the season that he got to be the guy. He got to show what he was capable of within an NFL offense as that number one back in his fourth year going into an unrestricted free agent season. Unfortunately for AJ, that season did not go according to plan for him. I would argue of the four seasons, that was his worst performance as a player. And that certainly did not set him up well for his free agency period. That being said, even with him maybe coming off a lesser season, I was still a little bit surprised that teams did not go back and look at previous seasons where he did have some pretty impressive games, some pretty impressive seasons. And he's still easily within the prime of his career. He does not have a lot of wear and tear because he has been the number two back in Green Bay. And I would have expected him to get something like a maybe like a 1 year, $4 million or like a 2 year, $7 million type of deal with maybe like $1 million to $1.5 million guaranteed. I'm not talking about Josh Jacobs money or, you know, Saquon Barkley money here, even DeAndre Swift money. I'm just talking about a nice little contract on the open market that he would have been able to go and get for himself. And maybe he had the opportunity to do so and turned it down. He has talked about the fact that there were better offers out there than Green Bay that he turned down to stay in Green Bay. And one of the reasons why you could certainly spin this and say AJ Dillon was a winner is because I wholeheartedly believe that AJ Dillon wanted to remain in Green Bay. He's got family in Green Bay. He married his wife that is, you know, born and raised in Green Bay. Like he's developed a core. Of course, he's the mayor of Door County. I'm sure that that was a huge piece of that decision-making for him. So in that part, like that's great that he was able to do that. I still would have to believe that if some team came calling with a 2 year, $10 million deal or something significant with decent, you know, a good guaranteed amount of money, that he probably goes and plays elsewhere for a season or two, for better or worse. That offer seemingly did not come. And it certainly did not come from Green Bay either. I don't believe that the Packers had any real belief that AJ Dillon was going to be a Packer in 2024. I'm sure like every single free agent, they say, hey, go out there, see what's available. And if it doesn't look good, come back and we'll have that discussion. It kind of feels like that's what happened. And they ended up, you know, sort of figuring out, and I'm sure Green Bay knew about it, obviously, but kind of, you know, settling into that, you know, that roster bonus or that roster option that is available for players who have, accrued four seasons with one team that gives a little bit of a bonus to the player where they get paid more money, but it counts less against the salary cap. So in this instance, AJ Dillon gets paid $2.575 million on a one-year deal. So a $2.6 million deal, $2,600,000, we'll just put it that way to make it round it up and make it easy. $2.6 million on a one-year deal, that's what he gets paid. For AJ, that's all he cares about. He doesn't care about what the salary cap ramifications are or anything like that. He wants to know how much he's going to get paid and how much his guaranteed money is. So he gets $1.26 million while the Packers basically only have to count half of that against the salary cap. In this case, basically, we'll just round it up again, $1.3 million. So they get this beautiful benefit. Yes, they have to pay him the $2.6 million, but only $1.3 million counts against the cap. They get to pay Dillon $2.6 million. Dillon gets more money than what he would if he was just signing for that vet minimum type of deal, but they basically get him at a vet minimum contract. Here for Dillon is where it gets more complex. He only gets $167,000 guaranteed, $167.5. That's not a lot from a guaranteed standpoint. What you want as an agent of a player is you want to get that guarantee up as much as possible for a variety of reasons. Number one, obviously it's guaranteed. You get that no matter what, and you get that upon signing. It's a signing bonus, so you get that right away. Number two, the bigger reason is the larger the signing bonus, the more likely that it is that they're not going to cut you because they have to pay that no matter what, which means you're more likely to get the full bulk of your contract. For Green Bay, they could, and we've talked about this in the past, realize that maybe Emmanuel Wilson takes a big step, or maybe Jarvion Howard was an unbelievable undrafted free agent find. If all of a sudden they get to the point where there's another running back that is making a name for himself that makes less money, Green Bay can get off of that $2.6 million that they have to pay him, and they only have to pay him then the $167.5K that they already paid him. It's not an exorbitant cost, and they can get out of that deal. For A.J. Dillon, having the opportunity to hit unrestricted free agency in the prime of your career doesn't come along all that often, and having to sort of quote-unquote settle for a deal that isn't a ton guaranteed, that does not lock you into a roster spot in caps at $2.575 million, is I'm sure not what he was looking for going into this offseason. For that reason, I'm sure it was disappointing for him. The second thing here is, not only that, but I'm sure if you would have told them that he was back with the team and Aaron Jones was gone, you're probably thinking, oh my goodness, I might have an opportunity to start for the team. And instead, they bring in Josh Jacobs, and they do give Jacobs a big, significant deal. And then they double down and they go and get a third round pick in Marshawn Lloyd that is clearly younger, faster, more explosive, and is probably going to get more opportunities as a playmaker than what Dillon will get. So not only does Dillon have to settle for less money than, again, I'm sure he was probably hoping for, it's an unrestricted free agent, now he goes potentially from a number two, and at one point maybe thinking, hey, I might be able to compete for a key spot here, to you're probably the number three guy. And again, going a step further there, you're not 100% guaranteed a position, even if I think we would all agree it's very likely that he is on the roster. So for that reason, again, I don't think, you know, if you're A.J. Dillon, you're probably super in love with the circumstances. I will give A.J. this. He looks like he's in phenomenal shape. And I'm not talking about, you know, not to make another X-Men reference here, I'm not talking about like juggernaut shape where he's just this big, thick build and you're looking to run through brick walls. I'm talking, he looks more spry. He looks more svelte. He looks like it's like, how do I want to say this? Like, it's a good weight. It's like, it's functional strength that you're going to be able to be a bit more dynamic with than maybe he was in the past. And I think that could serve him very well. And I'll go back to what I talked about when this deal was initially signed. If they get the best version of A.J. Dillon on a 1 year, $1.3 million against the salary cap deal to be your number three running back, what a luxury that is for the Green Bay Packers. So this all the way around is a winning deal for the Packers, but for A.J. Dillon, it doesn't, again, give that great vibe. Again, the circumstances aren't as good as maybe they could have been for him going into an unrestricted free agent year, and he moves down the pecking order because of the signings of Josh Jacobs and the drafting of Marshawn Lloyd. Hey everybody, we are officially in the thick of the NBA and NHL finals, and over the course of the next couple weeks, we will crown new champions in both leagues. We're also in the midst of baseball season. The WNBA is seriously heating up with crazy new stories every single day. And don't forget about esports either. Whatever your interest is, make it more interesting with Prize Picks. There's always action on Prize Picks, and right now, every Wednesday and Saturday in June, if your esports lineup doesn't win, you'll get your entry fee back. Choose from Counter-Strike 2, Call of Duty, League of Legends, and so many more. And of course, there are still plenty of incredible selections available during the NHL and NBA finals. And right now, Prize Picks is lowering select player stat projections on Tuesdays, which increases your chances of getting a win. There are a ton of unique promotions available that you will not want to miss out on. This week, I'm expecting a massive performance from two of the biggest stars in the world, Connor McDavid and Luka Doncic. Both need huge performances to give their respective teams a chance to win a championship, so I'm going heavy with those two. I'm also going with Sabrina Ionescu in the WNBA. There's never been a better time to get in the action with Prize Picks, and we're making it easy for you here at Packaday. Just download the Prize Picks app today and use code Packaday for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Hello, friends. As many of you know, a few years back, the Milwaukee Bucks were in the NBA Finals, and I desperately wanted to go to Game 6 in Milwaukee to see them win the championship. As you can imagine, prices were insane, and I kept going back and forth with different apps to try and find the cheapest tickets possible. I finally found them, clicked purchase, and of course they were gone. Goodbye Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Now, thankfully, the day of the game I was able to find a ticket, but the entire thing was so expensive and way too stressful. I really wish I could have simply used Game Time to alleviate all of the stress and all of the hassle. I've started using Game Time app for purchasing all of my tickets, and I wish I would have done so sooner. From low prices to easy to find tickets to last minute ticket deals, the Game Time app is perfect for all of my ticket needs. Game Time is the fastest growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. You can get images of your seat before you buy, you can buy tickets in a matter of seconds, two clicks only in fact, and tickets are sent directly to your phone so you never need to dig through your email. The Game Time guarantee means you'll always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. That's code PACKADAY. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. Number two on my list is Rasheed Walker. And this is, again, where we talk about that there is nothing set in stone for these guys. These guys can all go out and still have phenomenal seasons and make a big impact for this team. For anyone that knows me, knows I love Rasheed Walker. I love what he's brought to the team so far. Love the pick in the seventh round. I am a constant spewer of Rasheed Walker positivity. This, again, is not a cutting the legs out from Rasheed Walker. I will say this, though. Most teams, when they have a player the caliber of Rasheed Walker along the offensive line, they're just going to say, that's our guy. We're just going to go with it. To the Packers' credit, they're just always looking to say, hey, we want competition. We want to get better. We think there's things that Rasheed can do better, and we're either going to find a player that can be better than him, or we're going to find a player that can push him to be better. And I already think that that's happening. I think the draft pick of Jordan Morgan has pushed Rasheed Walker to become even a better player, and I think he's had a really nice start to OTAs. That being said, like, they did draft a first round player who is only played left tackle in college. And as much as we want to say we think he has great versatility and he's already played at four different spots along the offensive line in OTAs, his primary best position is probably left tackle. Guess what? Rasheed Walker does not have quite as much versatility. Maybe he could play some right tackle, which unfortunately is already also occupied by Zach Tom. And if he does, meaning Jordan Morgan does just win that left tackle spot and Zach Tom doesn't move off right tackle, you could be looking at a Rasheed Walker saying, like, this guy's a really good player and he's just your swing tackle. And just like with AJ Dillon, this is a great problem to have for the Packers. And we know they're going to desperately try to do everything they can to get the best five guys on the line. And if Rasheed Walker does take this as a challenge, like it seems like he has, and Matt LaFleur's already talked about at length about how proud he is of how Rasheed Walker's responded to this, not bringing up anything, not being disappointed, just going about his job, I think that could make Rasheed a better player. And maybe it ends up that Jordan Morgan's at left guard or right guard or another position. And we basically know that this offensive line, whoever the starters are, is not just going to stay 100% healthy all throughout the year. There's going to be opportunities. So Rasheed's going to play this year. He might start every game at left tackle still. But like I said, a lot of teams, when you see Rasheed play like he did a season ago, would just say, that's our guy. We're not even going to try to, upgrade that. We're good. He's our left tackle. And that could have been what Green Bay did. But instead, they go in and they drafted Jordan Morgan, which could be theoretically his replacement at left tackle, and it could leave Rasheed a little bit more in the lurch. And I'm sure with all the different options that were available there in the first round for Green Bay, I think we all sort of knew that offensive lineman, offensive tackle was going to be very much in the conversation in some capacity. But for Rasheed Walker, I'm sure you were probably hoping, hey, don't you want to go corner? Don't you want to go, edge rusher, defensive line, one of these other positions, and maybe not go offensive tackle? Could you draft a guard instead? But no, they went left. They went not only tackle, they went left tackle, which clearly is Rasheed's position. So in some way, I think you have to say that's a bit of a disappointment for him. And again, is why I put him number two on this list. Number three, Isaiah McDuffie. What you're looking at, if you're Isaiah McDuffie, going into this season is you get the news, first of all, that Jeff Hafley is your defensive coordinator. And the only player on the team who is familiar with Jeff Hafley is Isaiah McDuffie, who played with him, you know, at Boston College, was his linebacker while he was there as the head coach. So you have that familiarity already there. It's starting off really well. Then Devondre Campbell leaves in free agency, and that starts even better. You move to a 4-3, which means there's going to be more linebackers on the field, not less, which is also advantage Isaiah McDuffie. So like everything is trending in the right way here. You're looking at it as, from an Isaiah McDuffie standpoint. Remember, wasn't until later that Eric Wilson and Christian Welch even signed back. You're looking at the depth chart and it was like Quay Walker, Isaiah McDuffie, and like nothing. And then even then, when you sign Christian Welch and Eric Wilson, they still could have gone with other big time free agents. It was a really large off-ball linebacker free agent class, and they didn't sign a single one. And you're thinking, wow, this is going to be potentially Quay Walker and Isaiah McDuffie as your two starting linebackers. And then the draft comes and they take Edgerrin Cooper. And if you're Isaiah McDuffie, you're probably still like, all right, well, still, if we're going to play some 4-3, it's going to be Quay Walker, Edgerrin Cooper, Isaiah McDuffie. You get that, maybe that number three spot still. And then one round later, third round, Tyron Hopper gets picked. You drafted two off-ball linebackers at that position. Now, I still don't think it's catastrophic for McDuffie. Hopper is going to have to earn that spot. Cooper is going to have to earn that spot. We've already seen that. McDuffie's got some time in the 4-3 already, and he'll get an opportunity to compete for everything at the off-ball linebacker position. So I'm not saying that this is, again, no man's land for McDuffie, but there was a time this offseason where you felt like, hey, it's just going to be Quay and McDuffie. And then the draft happened and it went in an entirely different direction. The other thing here too is if you're McDuffie, you're not just looking at this season, right? You're looking at beyond, and you go into next season and now you've got Quay under contract still, and you have to make that fifth year option. And now you've got two rookies that are already on the roster in Edgerrin Cooper and Tyron Hopper that you invested a lot of resources into with day two draft picks. Even if McDuffie goes out and plays pretty well, he's probably going to have to get a contract somewhere else. Or it's a similar like AJ Dillon situation where he comes back on a one-year deal for less money than he probably is hoping for. So if you're McDuffie, you never want to see two draft picks at your same position in the top 100. That's exactly what happened to him. And for that reason, he comes in at number three on the list. And again, still some positives here because Jeff Hafley is the coordinator. I do think he's going to have opportunity to play. Still a core special teamer. He's going to, in all likelihood, make the 53-man roster. So again, not catastrophic, but probably could have been better if you don't get two top 100 draft picks at that specific position. And for that reason, number four on my list is Quay Walker. Let's just put it this way. Yes, they are running a 4-3. Yes, they're going to need more linebackers on the roster. However, if Quay is just playing out of his mind and is an unbelievable linebacker, I'm not so sure that you still draft and invest two top 100 picks at off-ball linebacker. We just talked about Quay has that fifth-year option coming up where they're going to have to decide next offseason if they want to extend a fifth-year opportunity or a fifth-year option to Quay Walker. And as of right now, and I know Perry and I had this conversation the other day, and we politely disagreed on that conversation. She thought Quay is much more likely to be back on a fifth-year deal, and I said I don't know. I'm much more, if it was decided today, I don't necessarily think that he is. And in large part, that's because they just spent two top 100 picks on off-ball linebacker. And if all of a sudden Edgerrin Cooper and Tyron Hopper play extremely well this season, I think it's more likely that they say, yeah, you know what? We've got two young guys under contract. We'll continue to add to that room. We don't need to pick up a fifth-year option for Quay. And if he has an amazing fourth year, then we'll figure it out and we'll extend him at that time. But we don't need to do that aggressively and pick that up in the, in the off season. So because of that, again, if you're Quay Walker and those two draft picks do not get made, like we know Isaiah McDuffie is not going to be that long-term number one linebacker option. You go into next off season being like, man, yeah, they're going to have to, maybe sign or draft some people later, but I'm probably a pretty good shoe-in to get that fifth year option picked up. And I'm just the guy. And now I think Quay is going to have to compete with Edgerrin Cooper for that dime position. I think they'll both be on the field for nickel. They'll both be on the field for 4-3. But I could see Cooper, as time goes on, taking more and more responsibility in this defense, and Quay maybe taking a little bit less. I could see eventually, maybe even as soon as next year, maybe even at some point this year, that maybe Adrian Cooper takes over those green dot responsibilities. I think those things are going to be worth keeping an eye on. As I've talked about with all these guys, it's not catastrophic. He's going into the season right now as linebacker one. And I would guess that he starts the season as linebacker one and ends the season as linebacker one. And I'm still hopeful on Quay. I think he can become a very good linebacker in this league. I think this year, year three with Jeff Hafley and Anthony Campanelli as his new linebackers coach, I think this is the season where he needs to show he can break out and really be a big time player. But I think that's within his reach. I really do. But now it's going to be up to him. Because if not, if he doesn't, if he has sort of another so-so-ish season, that fifth-year option is not getting picked up, and it's a much more likely opportunity that Adrian Cooper and Tyron Hopper are your future at linebacker, and maybe not Quay Walker and one of those guys. Number five is Anthony Johnson Jr. And with Anthony Johnson Jr., it should be noted, like, he's started so far every OTA session that's been open to the media at safety next to Xavier McKinney. But this is another one of those situations where if you're Anthony Johnson Jr., you know, even, you know, you get McKinney in pretty much right away, but you see Rudy Ford not retained. You see Jonathan Owens go to Chicago. You see, who is the other one? Oh, Darnell Savage go to Jacksonville. You see all these guys exiting. You're Anthony Johnson Jr. And you're thinking, you're doing some safety math and you're like, all right, well, first of all, I'm a really good lock to like make the 53. And you're like, second of all, as of right now, yeah, Xavier's going to be the one, but I only have to compete with like Benny Sapp and Zane Anderson for that starting job. Like, okay. And even if they draft somebody, like, I can go out and compete with a rookie and maybe have the opportunity to go out and earn that job. You feel pretty good about it. And to be fair, he should still feel decent about it in the fact that he's gotten the opportunity to already compete for that starting spot. That's a great thing. But if you're Anthony Johnson, imagine that you're sitting back watching the draft and you're like, all right, Javon Bullard in the second round. That's all right. You know, McKinney, Bullard, myself, and then Zane Anderson, Benny Sapp. Like, we'll, you know, I'll still have a great opportunity to make the team and still have, you know, some really good opportunities to compete. The fourth round comes along, you trade up for Evan Williams and you're starting to do that safety math again. You're like, all right, well, like, now there's a couple more guys. And then they come back in the fifth round, draft Ketan Oladapo in the fifth round. You're just like, okay, all right, really? Not only did you go and sign the biggest free agent signing at safety in Xavier McKinney, but you also drafted three safeties in the top five rounds. Like, did we really need to go that aggressively? And then it becomes, well, you know, Goody's not probably cutting anyone in the first five rounds of the draft. Like, that just does not happen in year one. So those three guys are making the team. Xavier McKinney is making the team. And now if I'm making it, I have to make it as the fifth guy. And when you get more into that conversation, where does it lean more? Special teams. And who am I competing against now? Zane Anderson and Benny Sapp, whose two biggest things, or those two are best known for, their special teams ability, where Anthony Johnson isn't quite at their level as a special teams player. So he might be the fourth best safety. Maybe he beats out Ketan Oladapo. Maybe he beats out Evan Williams. Maybe he's the third best actual safety. But like, you have four guys that aren't getting cut, and that fifth spot could come down just to special teams. So if you're Anthony Johnson Jr., that's a tough pill to swallow as you're navigating that offseason and being like, man, all the guys that were here before are gone except for me, you know, Benny Sapp and Zane Anderson. And then you get the big free agent signing, three draft picks, and the entire calculus has changed. Next up, Anders Carlson. It should basically go without saying, it's normal, you know, maybe for the team to bring in like, let's just say they just brought in Jack Podlesny, right? That's sort of your token kicker competition. It's not really meaningful. You know who's already going to win that, you know, that job. And it's just a guy to maybe take a little bit of, I don't want to say pressure off, but like make it so that you don't have to do kicking every single day. Just kind of some of that wear and tear. And, you know, yeah, they could go out and perform great and you could have an awful offseason and things could change quickly. But barring anything crazy, you just know you're going to be the guy. But to have two people competing with you, including a veteran in Greg Joseph and that guy in Jack Podlesny, and your special teams coordinator saying, yeah, these are our three right now, but we might have three new guys by training camp. Like, everyone's competing for this spot. You've got some UFL kickers that have been tearing it up. This has not been what you want to see for a guy that was picked as a kicker in the fifth round a season ago. Like I said the other day, I think everyone should be cheering on Anders. I think he's the most talented kicker of the group. I do think that he has made some strides. I do think he's getting better, but if he doesn't show that consistency, he is by no means a lock to make the team. So this is a big offseason for Anders Carlson. He has to show that he can be the guy. He hasn't, in my opinion, quite done that yet. And now it's going to be up to him to have to go against Greg Joseph and Jack Podlesny and anyone else that they potentially bring in to try to win that spot and be the kicker in 2024. Number seven is Royce Newman. And Justice Mosqueda and I have talked about this, but Royce Newman's circumstances haven't necessarily changed due to anything other than him getting a raise, which is a really weird thing to say. Usually, in almost every walk of life, getting a raise is a great piece of news. I just got a huge increase. I got my salary went up three times. Imagine today anyone got told that they were going to now get triple their salary. If you were making 100K before, you're now making 300K. If you're making 50K before, you're now making 150K. Royce Newman was set to make $1 million per year, right around there. And now he gets a raise to $3.24 million. Imagine how excited 99.9% of the world would be to hear that news. For Royce Newman, it is in all likelihood terrible news. The reason being is because his guarantee does not go up. He still only has 125K guaranteed. And if you're Royce Newman, you sort of had to already know that you are squarely on that roster bubble and are going to have to fight tooth and nail, even at $1 million per year, to keep your roster spot because it has not gone well as of late. Now you make $3.24 million per year. You're making triple what, you know, a Donovan Jennings is making. You're making triple what a Jacob Monk is making. You're making triple what Andre Dillard is making. Luke Tenuta is making. Caleb Jones is making. You're making three times as much money as any of those guys. And if you're cut, there's no downside in cutting you because your guarantee money did not raise. So he is probably one of the few humans in the history of the world that got a three times salary increase. And it might be the only time that that's been a horrible, a very bad thing for that specific person. It is a very rare circumstance, but in Royce Newman's situation, it is. And then of course they did draft three offensive linemen. They bring in Andre Dillard. There's a lot more competition, I think, overall along the offensive line. Donovan Jennings was the biggest priority undrafted free agent that they have, who's specifically a guard. And Royce Newman is going to have to fight for everything while also knowing that he carries a bigger salary cap hit by three times than almost anyone else that he's competing with. That is a poor situation to be in if you're Royce Newman. Now, of course, it should go without saying that Royce and his agent can renegotiate a contract if need be. If the Packers come to him and say, hey, we want to keep you as one of our 10 offensive linemen, but we're not going to pay you more than the minimum, you know, they can renegotiate and say, okay, we'll bump it down to where it was, or they can release him and re-sign him. They can do a variety of different things there. So it's not like he's forced to take that amount. But in the meantime, it kind of is almost a negative because it does give Green Bay actually more incentive to cut Royce Newman than if he never got that raise in the first place. Number eight, Caleb Jones and Luke Tenuta. I don't need to spend a ton of time here. I don't think it's worth going over that much, but I think Caleb Jones and Luke Tenuta could have been in a situation where Rashid Walker is your starter at left tackle, Zach Tom's your starter at right tackle, and now Tenuta and Caleb Jones, one of those guys, are going to be the ones that are expected to come in and take over for Yash Nyman. Yash leaves in free agency, and now the battle between Caleb Jones and Luke Tenuta to be that swing tackle begins. Could have been the case, but then they draft Jordan Morgan in the first round. They sign Andre Dillard for the minimum, and now you've got way more competition. And I think the real nail in the coffin a little bit becomes they also draft Travis Glover in the fifth round. So not only did you draft a guy in the first round that's clearly not going anywhere, you still have Rashid and Zach Tom. Then you get Andre Dillard, a veteran that was a former first round pick that's making no money and is already getting some starts with Zach Tom out in OTAs ahead of Luke Tenuta and Caleb Jones. And then you go and get a fifth round guy who's a massive human being who has all the potential that you were hoping at one point that maybe Tenuta and Caleb Jones had to develop, and maybe, or maybe not, maybe they have or haven't developed yet. We'll have to wait and see. But this I've talked about is a make or break year for both of those guys. But when you go and get, you know, a first round pick, a Travis Glover in the sixth, and then, you know, go sign an Andre Dillard, it certainly makes it a lot more complicated to go out and try to make that roster. Can they still do it? Yep. But is there a lot of space left? Is there, easy access to make the 53? Certainly not. And those guys could be battling with each other for maybe just one spot, or it could be that neither of those guys make it. So it has changed quite a bit since the start of the offseason for both of those players. Number nine, Tucker Kraft. He tore his pack. And yes, Zach Tom, we could put in that conversation as well. It seems like Tom is further along. The other thing is we know Zach Tom and what he can be. He's sort of already a ready-made, really dominant, dominant might be the wrong word, but phenomenal, fantastic right tackle. He's great. Tucker Kraft was really just hitting that stride and like was on a perfect trajectory to really continue to break out. You don't want to miss any time if you're Tucker Kraft right now. Year two, trying to make that year two jump and being put in a position where you and Luke Musgrave are going to get a ton of time and you tear that pec. Or I don't know if it's torn or whatever. He injures the pec and now you're just set back. And when you're a year two player and really trying to continue to make that forward leap and that forward progression, you don't want any sort of injury issue at all. So that for Tucker Kraft is certainly a bummer. And no circumstance here. He's still going to be one of the tight ends with Luke Musgrave. You know, he and Musgrave are going to be a lot of two tight end sets. Those guys are going to be rotating a ton. So there's no awful situation here, but you really wish that that was not the circumstance that he was in. Last but not least is Andre Dillard. We've talked about this. Last year with Tennessee, 3 years, $29 million, $13 million guaranteed to go over and be their starter. And he gets released from Tennessee and he gets 1 year vet minimum, goose egg guaranteed, $0. Doesn't even get a peanut butter and jelly sandwich guaranteed to him. I guess technically he does because he gets meals at the facility, but you get my point. There is no lock for him to make the roster. If he gets cut, he gets no money. And that is a pretty significant fall going from a guy that was brought over on a priority free agent deal to be a starter to a vet minimum guy with no money guaranteed. And I think that's the thing that I like about Dillard with the Packers this year from a Packers standpoint is it's now or never for Dillard. If he doesn't figure it out now on his third team with like everything on the line, this might be it. It probably just doesn't happen. And reports have been good so far. Matt LaFleur said he's a perfect scheme fit. We know he has the talent from being a former first round pick. Loved him coming out of college. It needs to stick now. He has to be a guy that can fill in. But for Andre Dillard, I'm sure once you're released from Tennessee, you're still hoping, all right, some team is going to give me some guarantees, some decent contract. And it just was not out there. I like his decision to sign with Green Bay. I think it's a really good landing spot. I think he can be that next Yosh Nyman this year where he can be that swing tackle for them, but he's going to have to go prove it. And in the meantime, he got the very, very, very minimum deal that you can possibly get with his level of experience in the NFL. Couple honorable mentions, Zane Anderson and Benny Sapp III. We talked about it with Anthony Johnson Jr. It's even a degree worse for guys at the very bottom of the roster. Again, they're looking at all those safeties leaving and then are watching on draft day as Evan Williams, Javon Bullard, and Ketanji Ladapo all get drafted in the first five rounds. And that is probably not a fun experience for those guys. Alex Magoo, I'm sure it's not an easy conversation to have the team come to you and say, hey, we want to keep you on the roster, but you're going to go from a position that you've played basically your entire life to a wide receiver at age 29. And we also hate to tell you, it's our most stacked position on the entire roster. And there's almost 0% chance that you can make a 53-man route. Like that is a tough pill to swallow, tough situation for Alex Magoo. And then Emmanuel Wilson too. If Dillon does not come back on that deal, there's a really good chance that Emmanuel Wilson is just thought of as the easy number three guy behind Jacobs and Marshawn Lloyd. But bringing back Dillon, signing Josh Jacobs, and then drafting Marshawn Lloyd clearly puts him at number four at best right now in that pecking order. And he's going to have to jump AJ Dillon if he wants, not only, you know, theoretically, could you make the 53 as a number four running back? Theoretically, yes. Is it super likely? I don't know. Probably not. But if you want playing time, he's got a lot of guys to go through at this point, one way or the other. So those are the honorable mentions. Full list, AJ Dillon, Rashid Walker, Isaiah McDuffie, Quay Walker, Anthony Johnson Jr., Anders Carlson, Royce Newman, Caleb Jones / Luke Tenuta, Tucker Kraft, Andre Dillard, and then the honorable mentions, Zane Anderson, Benny Sapp III, Alex Magoo, and Emmanuel Wilson. That's going to do it for me today. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Bradad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handel, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, Dan Miller, Alex Wong, and Arnaldo Espinoza. Arnaldo, I'm so sorry. I love you, man. I will be right back here tomorrow with an all-new episode, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.